Welcome to Orphans No More, a radio extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry, a program dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, advocating Christian families to adopt and get involved with foster care here in the Capital District, as well as globally, and encouraging and supporting those who've heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Join your host, Sandra Flack.
Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. That is Proverbs 4:23. This is Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry. I'm your host, Sandra Flack. Our guest today, joining us from California, is former foster youth, Karen Christensen. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Hi, Sandra. It's good to be here.
It is an honor to have you on the show. Karen, your story is so important for our listeners to hear, especially those that are foster and adoptive parents. We're going to bring it to you in two episodes. This week, part one will feature your story. And then next week, part two, we will discuss what you have learned from your childhood experiences and the healing that you have come to. Your story is full of immense pain and trauma you were in and out of the foster care system. So, Karen, would you share your story with us?
I would be happy to do that. Thank you again so much for the invitation, Sandra. I do need to say that my story has so many twists and turns that it's sometimes hard for listeners to keep up. And I often say that Hollywood couldn't even have written my story, only God. And I do my best to tell it in a way that makes the most sense, but if someone's having trouble following along, they can go to my blog, and I've written a portion of it there, and I'll share how to find that blog at the end. My story begins with two really broken people, my parents. They each had equally difficult things to navigate in their lives growing up, so it's no surprise that they both brought a ton of emotional baggage into their short-lived marriage. My dad was in the military and when I was young and stationed overseas, and our mother proved incapable of taking care of me and my brother, who's almost exactly a year older than I am. And although we were just toddlers, he was always very protective of me. I was always like his little shadow, and we were always together. We lived in a small trailer park in Southern California. And I received copies of affidavits when I was an adult, which are sworn testimonies to a judge, that my brother and I were often seen roaming the space unattended. Our basic needs were unmet. We weren't bathed or clothed properly. We were often found knocking on neighbor's door asking for food. One neighbor said that she found us one day eating out of her dog's dish, because we were so hungry. And my brother would, one of the stories talked about how my brother, and he would have my hand, you know, and we would walk up to a door and knock on it and just, I'm tired, because we were, and this neighbor would take us in and put us to bed in the middle of the night because nobody knew where our mother was. She would just take off sometimes, you know, for days or even weeks at a time. And just leave us. And when I started reading these affidavits, I started reading them like one would read a book, you know, and then suddenly the realization hit me that the girl they kept referring to was me. This was my story. And I was overcome with sadness because I don't remember. I really just have snippets of memories of those really, you know, toddler years, which I'm grateful for. But my brother, who's a year older, unfortunately, he does remember more. And on occasion, he has shared a couple of those stories with me. And I'm telling you, they are just heartbreaking. And it's sad, you know, that he remembers them. So a relative notified my father, and he came home to a house in shambles. It reeked of urine. The toilet was backed up and overflowing. Flies surrounded the dirty dishes piled in the kitchen sink. there was no food in the house, and our mother was nowhere to be found. And so he took us. Today, our faces would be on a milk carton because he didn't use any legal channels at first to get us. He just took us. And, you know, we needed rescuing, but it was still done in a very traumatic way. One day we had a mom, and the next day we didn't. And like I said, even though we needed the rescuing, that still was it was so hard on us because a child needs their mother, even when it's an abusive relationship. So that was really hard. So he had to get an honorable discharge from the military and take on several jobs just to make ends meet, but it wasn't enough. And he tried putting us with relatives, but we were already fraught with poor behaviors at that point, so nobody wanted us. So he put us in a foster home and then moved us around, I'm imagining, to keep us from our mother finding us. And you could do that in the 60s in the foster care system. You could put your kids in for particular reasons. In this case, he couldn't afford to keep us. And then when you could just take them out. So obviously things have changed, and then when he got remarried when I was 5, he went to court and got full custody of both my brother and I. And again, that was highly unusual. It's kind of unusual today for the father to get full custody, but back in the 60s when this happened, I think it was probably close to unheard of. So you know things were, you know, really bad for that to have taken place. Unfortunately, this was my dad's third marriage, and he was still attracted to unhealthy women. So once again, he married someone who was wounded and broken, and the way that manifested itself was through emotional and physical abuse. She had a daughter from a previous marriage who her mama saw as pretty perfect, and right from the get-go, my new stepsister could do no wrong, and my brother and I became the scapegoats, meaning we were always in trouble. So we were a package deal that came with my dad, but she made it pretty clear early on that she didn't want us and that we were a major annoyance. There's a line from the movie Ever After, which is a 1998 version of Cinderella starring Drew Barrymore, in which she says so poignantly to her stepmother, "Was I never anything more to you than a pebble in your shoe?" When I heard that line as an adult, I loved that movie, but when I heard that line as an adult, all the feelings came flooding back because it so aptly described how our stepmother treated us, like we were just a pebble in her shoe, an annoyance. And we were really expected to be seen and not heard, quiet all the time, inside or outside, like we were never allowed to really make noise. So one time I was evidently being too loud in the car. I was always being told to shut up and be quiet. And I figured out as an adult that my voice isn't loud as much as it carries. So somebody whose voice is loud but doesn't carry, you know what I mean? It's so people always heard me. Even when other kids were being loud, people always heard my voice because it carries further. So anyway, one time I was evidently being too loud in the car, and I was told to be quiet more than once. So my stepmom pulled the car over on the side of the road, told me to get out, and she drove off. And I think I was probably 7 or 8. And I mean, what's a kid supposed to think when that happens? You don't want me around. So she and my dad were both physically abusive in that we would get whipped with a belt, sometimes every day. And she was especially mean. And I know that doesn't sound like a big word, but it really fits how she treated us. She was mean emotionally. She was over-the-top controlling. And if we broke the rules, which we did on a regular basis because the rules were always changing, the punishments were equally abusive and always meant to demean and shame us. One time my brother stole some cookies out of the cookie jar at night, so So my stepmom went out and bought a big brown bag full of cookies and made him sit down and eat every last one. Mm. He would throw up, and she would make him come back and eat more until every last one of them was gone. One weekend, she tied me to my bed. And I don't even remember what I'd done wrong, but I wasn't allowed up except to go to the bathroom. Another time, my dad didn't feel like I listened to him, so after telling me I was no better than the dog, I was forced to sleep outside on the ground with the dog. And all of this was supposedly to teach us a lesson. So I began running away, and my brother did too. And by this time I was in junior high. I had been labeled a pathological liar, incorrigible, and had been sent to juvenile hall. Now, I hadn't done anything big or wrong to be in juvenile hall. I had just kept running away, but nobody knew what to do with me. So at one point, I was placed in a foster home for a few months to see if that would, quote-unquote, straighten me out. And the interesting thing was, it was a really good foster home, and I kind of flourished in it. But the judge, I think, was older and more old school, and so after that, he just put me back with my parents after a few months. Like, okay, good, you're straightening out, and now I put you back with your parents, which was totally unproductive. So it's here that I need to jump ahead in the story in order to get where we're going for this broadcast. My great aunt got involved, and she stepped in to find me a new home, and it was all through the court system. So it was the summer after my eighth grade year, and we traveled all over, but she was unable to find anyone who wanted a smart-mouthed, loud, obnoxious, and unruly teenager. I mean, go figure. So it got down to 3 weeks before we had to return to court, and we were visiting relatives in a farming community in Michigan. My family had lived in that same town when I was in elementary school, and I had kept up pen pal communication with my then little best friend in third and fourth grade. And she invited me to visit her family on what was supposed to be just an afternoon visit. And then they invited me to stay for like 3 days. And her family even invited my aunt over for dinner one night on the premise that they wanted to get to know her. And on the day that my aunt was scheduled to pick me up, my friend's mom told me that they all wanted to talk to me before I left. And I'm sure she saw the look of panic on my face. So she assured me that I hadn't done anything wrong because, of course, I thought, oh, my gosh, I've done something wrong. So we all went outside and sat on the front lawn of their farm, and she proceeded to invite me to come live with them. And on the inside, I was ecstatic, but outwardly, I turned her down. And I felt compelled to give this Rolodex list of all my sins. You know, I lie, I cheat, I steal, I swear, I smoke, I blah, blah, blah. And I squinted my eyes and looked her straight in the eye, which I never did to adults, and said in my very toughest voice that I could muster, if I come and live with you, I will ruin your family. And then there was just this pause, and she stayed really calm, and then she responded, you know, Karen, those are all the things that you've been told you are, but we don't believe that. You've spent the last 3 days with us, and we see something very different inside of you, and we think with a lot of hard work, you would fit right in with our family. And I had never heard anything like that before. You know, I had been told I was bad and worthless and no good, and hearing her words was like water in the desert to my parched soul. So she actually asked a second time, and then I said yes.
Wow. Is that the last foster family that you were with?
That was. I was about to start my first year of high school, ninth grade. And yes, so that ended up being the last foster home that I was in.
Wow. And clearly up to that point, you're entering ninth grade, you had endured so much trauma in your mm-hmm. young life. Was that home, it sounded like the mom really understood a little bit that, you know, you weren't bad, but bad things had happened to you. Was that a place of healing? How long were you there? And tell us that portion of your story.
Yeah, it was a huge place of healing. Now, it's important to note that this family had never been foster parents before, and they had never even tried. But the mom had a pretty traumatic growing up in her own life, and I believe that what she was kind of witnessing with me was that she needed saving at that age, and so then here was an opportunity to step in and save someone. But they didn't receive any training, zero training on how to handle a traumatized foster kid. And that lack of training would be really emphasized when I became a senior in high school. So the first couple of years were really challenging, really for everyone. I was so used to survival mode that I didn't trust anyone, including my new parents. I flinched every time anyone came near me. Hugs felt awkward. I still lied out of self-protection. I even stole something once and got caught and was so scared of being whipped that I became physically ill. So I still had all the residue of the trauma. And it took a lot of patience on their part and doing their level best to help me heal and learn to fit in. They didn't always do that perfectly, but compared to where I had been, it was so much better than what I was used to. And besides giving me a home, they gave me a new identity, which I was more than willing and wanted that new identity. I was now part of their family, and they gave me their name. They said, here, use your name. So I did. All through high school, I used their name. And at one point, they even wanted to adopt me. I mean, it was a mutual thing. They wanted to, and I wanted them to. But my natural father wouldn't let them. They tried, and they had to contact him, and he wouldn't let them. But that's how much they loved me, and the feelings were totally mutual. I adored them. And then, in the middle of my senior year in high school, everything changed. My grandmother on my mother's side, and I get emotional. It's not that God hasn't brought healing. It's just that I think I will always feel like this is a sad thing. My grandmother on my mother's side invited me to a family reunion, and my brother was there. And we had been separated when I went to in their home, and they didn't take him because A, they didn't expect to take me, and B, they didn't know him. You know, their daughter and I had been friends, and they didn't know him, so they didn't take him. They just took me. And that was its own trauma, you know, being without my brother for all those years. And it was traumatic to him too as well, when we later talked about that. And that was really hard. So I found out that he was going to be at this family reunion. And of course, I jumped at the chance. And then my parents told me that my natural mother was also going to be there. And I took pause with that because I was actually scared. So my dad had never talked about her because he treated the situation as if she was dead. And that can cause as much damage as talking ill of a person, you know, is just treating them like they're dead to you. I mean, my brother and I never knew what happened. We didn't know if she was dead. And so here she was, and I had the opportunity to meet her, and I just was having a complete range of emotions with that. And so my parents gave me the choice to go, but what I didn't realize was they didn't want me to go. In fact, they saw my choice to go as a betrayal of all that they had done for me, and they didn't believe that I would come back. And I didn't know this until later. And they didn't express any of that to me. They just gave me the choice of going. And of course, none of their fears were true. I loved my foster family, and the things that they were afraid of never even entered my mind. In fact, I was really nervous about meeting her, you know? And so When I did come back from the reunion, it was met with indifference and anger, and I was extremely confused. It was my foster mom who had taught me how to process my feelings out loud. And yet whenever I started talking about my visit, she would become angry and dismissive. And it was just so confusing. Then one night, shortly after I returned, it all came to an explosive end. I was called to a family meeting where my foster dad accused me of talking ill about the family and continually told me that I wasn't happy there. It was like he was putting words in my mouth. And I just sat there so confused. I know I've said that word like three times now, but that's how I felt. And I didn't understand where this was coming from. It wasn't like him, especially. He was so easygoing and so quiet and mild-mannered. And then he was the one who was saying all these things. And he just kept saying, you know, you're not happy here. We've tried everything we can, you know, to make you happy. But since you're not, you know, we don't know what else to do. And things escalated, and he went on to tell me that I was never really a part of their family. Mm. And that if I wanted to remain in their home, I would be treated as a guest. Mm. And if I crossed some line, whatever it was, I would be asked to leave. And when I tried to defend myself, he wouldn't let me. My sister tried to defend me, and he told her to be quiet. And I had never seen him act like this or talk like this, and it just seemed so out of the ordinary and out of the blue. And like I said, I think it's just always a tender spot for me because it was also really unfortunate. It just didn't need to happen. It took more than 30 years for me to stop blaming myself and realize it was a poor parenting choice on their part. And this is where having some kind of training would have helped them navigate through what every adopted or foster child feels at some point in their lives. We have a curiosity and a need to know our birth parents. It's the DNA that God has put in us. Mm. So why wouldn't we want to know where we came from? But they did not understand that. And that's where I think training or somebody to at least sounding board for them to talk to and say, listen, Karen wants to go to this, you know, and I think somebody would have been able to allay their fears and just said, you know, this is all normal and it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't take back any of all the good work you've done. And that's where it just all is so unfortunate because that's what happened.
Yeah.
They were having all of these fears and beliefs that me choosing to go to meet my natural mother, not live with her, just meet her, was a betrayal. Mm-hmm. And so I was in shock at all of this that was happening is pretty much an understatement. I mean, I don't even know how to describe what I was thinking and feeling. But suddenly their love felt conditional. And I didn't have the tools to deal with their rejection because I wanted to apologize and make things right, but I didn't even know what I'd done wrong. And things went from bad to worse, and they basically stopped talking to me altogether. The entire family shunned me. It was one thing when my parents were saying those things, but then my foster sister, whom we were super close, when she started stopping talking to me and not sitting with me, you know, when we went back to school at the lunch tables and, you know, things like that. It was a true, like, shunning. That's when I couldn't take it anymore. And so I'm skipping ahead again, but after a few weeks, I ended up doing the very thing they were afraid I would do. I left.
Wow.
Because I just didn't know how to stay. And I didn't know what I'd done wrong, so I couldn't fix it.
Hmm.
And it was like 1,000 deaths in one day. I lost my home, my family, my friends, school, church, everything that was familiar to me. And looking back, I really don't know how I moved away, and I don't know how I survived that emotional earthquake. And it really put me back to square one with trust, because as trust goes, so goes the relationship.
Yeah, Karen.
And I had given my foster parents something that I had never given another adult ever, and that was trust.
Yeah. And that was so many years ago, 30 years ago, and there just wasn't trauma training for foster and adoptive parents back then. And you've had all this time to process this, and you've learned so much from the experience. And really quick, as we wrap up here, when we do part two next week, what are the two things you learned that you will expound upon next week?
So I learned a lot. But we, you know, we talked ahead of time, and we're going to narrow it down to two really important things that'll be a message not only for people who are thinking about fostering or adopting or who already are in that process, but also to anyone who's ever been in a situation where they've been adopted or fostered. And that is this: two really important things came out of this for me, two takeaways. And one is trust, like I just said, because when that happened, I stopped trusting God too, and felt like he had really betrayed me. I could not wrap my mind around the fact that, like, how they came to be and then how they were suddenly, quote unquote, taken away. And then the other thing that whole experience caused for me was it stripped away my identity, because I belonged. And suddenly, I became that old Karen again, troublemaker, family wrecker, messed up, no good kid that was beyond help. And so how, when we go through trauma, and it's really, I guess, for anybody, when we go through trauma, how do we hang on to trust, and how do we find our identity? Because those are the two things that get shaken when we go through that.
Well, Karen, thank you for so candidly sharing your story today. I hope our listeners will tune in for part two of our conversation next week so that they can hear how you've healed and what you've learned along the way. We'll be talking about identity and trust. So thank you, Karen, for being on today.
You are so welcome. And I, as I promised, I wanted to give the name of my blog, which is State of the Heart Living. .com, like state of the art, but stateoftheheartliving.com. That's where they can read the story if they want to read it.
Well, thank you. And thank you to our listeners for listening to Orphans No More today. You can find more episodes of this show right at our website, justicefororphansny.org, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And please be sure to subscribe to the show.
Thank you for supporting this program by listening today, sharing what you've heard, and praying for orphans and children in need everywhere. More information is available at justicefororphansny.org. Visit and discover how you can make a difference in a child's life. And be sure to tune in to Orphans No More next Friday.